All right, mics are hot.
Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Cannibalistic skeletons and destructive stockbrokers alike.
You know who you are.
My name is Jared, and with me is the one who lives to surround herself with an insane cast of characters, Anna.
Hey.
Hello. We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us here at our table. Today, we're at the Two Top table, where we will be looking at Misfit Heroes, designed by Phil Walker Harding, artwork created by Matt Owen, and published by Alderic Entertainment Group, or AEG, who was kind enough to provide us with a review copy of this game.
In Misfit Heroes, things have gone awry. The Earth has collided with another realm in some sort of wonky interdimensional event.
Dun, dun, dun!
Now, there's all sorts of wacky combinations of people, powers. Who knows what's happening? Welcome to Absurdia.
Absurdia!
This strange new land, where we must, of course, recruit a new band of misfit heroes to garner the most influence and to rule the regions of mountain, forest, sea, and cities. Welcome to a game of absurd characters, insane combos, and enough gold for a little while is what awaits each of you. Let's discuss Misfit Heroes.
So it's interesting, right? Because what really makes a hero?
I think it's how powerful you are.
That's what I've learned from this game.
And your heart, of course. Like in real life, you've got to have a good heart.
I don't know. I don't know that you do.
If you're powerful without a good heart, you're just a villain.
I think it's all about perspective.
All right. If you could have one superpower.
Oh boy.
What would it be?
I feel like there was a lot of... It was much more... It felt much more X-Men mutant-y than it did like an actual superpower. I know I'm kind of taking a jab at X-Men right now, but...
X-Men aren't real heroes.
Come at me, bro.
come at us in our Discord.
TheGameTablePodcast@gmail.com. But I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, everyone says flying or super intelligence or invisibility, something like that. You know, super speed's also one that's pretty common. Those are all really cool. But I think I would rather go the Doctor Strange route where I can stop time. Like, I want to be able to control time a little bit.
All right. That's fair. Now tell me what your least favorite career path might be, Jared.
Wow. This one hits right in the feels.
Oh, no.
Like, any career path ever?
Sure.
All right.
Use
well,
your imagination.
I don't have to. I'm sorry, Mom, but becoming an accountant would be miserable. I tried it for one semester in college and would rather drop out and go work at a fast food joint.
See, that's what I feel like this is. I feel like this is all of your kind of average fantasy world people, and then they get hit with some weird superpower. So I feel like yours would be the time-stopping accountant.
Wow. How many I know so many accountants that wish they could stop time.
And yet... How would you feel about being able to stop time in the middle of your accounting? Like, let me just sit with these numbers a little bit longer.
Yeah, that's what I want. Ooh. I want to do that.
Yeah.
That makes me excited.
That's what it feels like. It feels like there's these random fantasy characters and all of the superpowers or the jobs or the things just get shuffled around to all of them.
It's true. It's also very interesting, like, just from a concept perspective, going back to the what is a hero, because you're really, like, building... a band of pirates to help control this new land and be the one that takes over.
Ooh, so you might argue these are not actually heroes.
I'm just muscle. I'm asking the question.
Okay.
You know, I feel like I'm building my posse to go gain influence to take over the land. And the better that posse works together, the better I'm going to do.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm just saying. What about you? What would be your... Let me ask it a different way. What would be your nightmare scenario of a superpower or mutant ability?
Well, see, I've always said that I would love to be able to read minds.
Okay.
Because I'm a therapist and that would be incredibly useful.
If you can control it.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is the nightmare would be if I couldn't control it.
Ooh.
And people have different layers of thoughts. You know, you're not ever just thinking one thing. Like, you know, I'm thinking about this podcast, but I'm also like, oh, my leg's a little cramped. Let me stretch it out. Or what am I going to have for dinner tomorrow? You know, like, so just imagine if you had like thoughts three layers down and you heard them from everybody all the time, you'd probably go insane yourself.
Yeah, you wouldn't make it a week.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
Okay, so what, but you get like, okay, so you get one career path in this destructive mind warp.
Okay.
Which path are you choosing?
You want me to just pick any career path?
Yeah, it can be whatever. It can be as good as you want because I don't think you're going to make it a week.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
No, I'm saying like literally, not you specifically, like anybody will die after a week of going insane, of everybody's thoughts in their head.
I feel like I would have to become a barbarian then so I could at least, you know.
Wow.
Oh, no, I could be a hermit. That would be the way to do it.
That is a way to do it.
Mind reading hermit.
But see, here's the problem, guys.
That's me.
All the friends and listeners out there. The real cruel joke of this tale that Anna is spinning is she would still go insane.
I would. Being a hermit would be awful.
That is Anna's night. Anna, you have constructed your worst case scenario.
I mean, you are an accountant, so I feel like we're kind of fair.
Nope. I could survive. I wouldn't be happy about it, but I could survive. You are clinically insane at this point.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Good talk.
All right. All right. No. So
our listeners. You got more.
So I was just saying, because, you know, you get those like quizzes on.
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever. And they were like, take the middle letter of your last name and combine it with your favorite color. And that's your gummy bear name. I don't know. Anyway, so
wow,
if
we gummy were, bear name.
If we were, so yeah, that actually totally works. Actually, anyway, so if we,
go on.
No, so we're not gonna do that. But if any listeners would like to also choose their superpower and then their least favorite career and tell us how they feel like they might live their lives,
yeah,
in this new universe. There you have it, the formula in order to come and participate with us.
I think that would be great.
Misfit Heroes. I think it'd be really fun to hear people's ideas.
100%.
So anyway, shall we talk about this game?
Yeah, let's do it. Anna, tell us how to play this game.
No problem. So actually, before you play this game, you have to make your heroes.
Man, that is so true.
I know. This game like makes you create it as you go. Which I don't know if that's genius or just saving them some. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, it's not saving them some time.
It's not.
It's not.
But,
so,
well, before you jump in, I'll just say this is not AEG's first crack at this style of game. So this is a card construction. It's got a specific name, I think. But you're building the cards as you go. They have it in Dead Reckoning and some other hero building games that they've made in the past. I think Custom Heroes was one of the first ones that came out with it. But it does follow that same element where you have a sleeve and you have multiple cards that you're sliding in, and they have kind of a transparency to them where the two cards end up comboing together to create something new.
Yes. So in this case, you've got clear cards that are characters or the occupation, maybe, of this hero. And then you've got cards with a white background that are kind of like an attribute of the character. And so you're mixing together the clear cards and the white cards, and you're putting them together in a sleeve, and they together make a card. And those are the ones that you play with. And in fact, each time you play the game, the rulebook suggests that you trade out some of the cards, and that way you've got a completely unique gameplay experience and completely and different cards each time. So that was a fun little card construction thing that you get to do at the start when you open this game, and you get to read through all of your fun characters you've created, like I have here in front of me, a grave-robbing spirit and a killer cyclops. So that gives you an idea of some of the new characters that you might get to meet. So the goal of the game is to use money in order to buy the heroes, these cards that you've created. The heroes that you buy will gain you influence, and if you get enough influence, you will be able to collect quest tokens that will give you points for end game scoring. So the influence types are indicated by different elements. So you have your forest, which is a leaf, your water, which is a droplet, and a mountain, which is a Mountain.
Triangle.
Grace,
pro move by, I was about to like totally give you a pro move compliment for turning water into another word and then follow that up with mountains. So sorry. But no,
I'm sorry.
Droplet was incredible. I like that.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. So that's your influence. And once you collect 6 of a type, then you will be able to collect a quest token for that element type as well. There's also a quest token that you can create, that you can collect from having 2 of each. So 6 still, but 2 forest, 2 water, 2 mountain. The quest tokens start at 12 points for the first person that claims them, all the way down to 8 points at the very end. So, and the cards are different types as well. So you've got some heart cards, and those just give you an automatic bonus as soon as you play them. You've got green triangle cards. Those cards only activate if they meet a certain condition. You've got star cards, which activate if you give something up. And you've got trophy cards, which are for end game scoring. So as you go through the game, you need to balance having enough cards in your hand, having enough money, and of course collecting those influence tokens. On your turn, you can either recruit a hero card, which is where you pay the cost to play the card. You can gain 10 coins, you can gain 1 element, or you can discard any number of cards from your hand and then draw 2 cards plus the amount that you discarded. And then at the end of your turn, if you meet any of the criteria to collect any of the quest tokens, you can do that. Throughout the game, you will be creating a 4x4 grid of the heroes that you recruit. And the first person to complete this grid triggers the last round of the game. And then you tally up all your points from your quest tokens and any remaining money and influence.
That's the game.
That's the game.
All right, Anna, give me a few more examples, because I feel like the Killer Cyclops, pretty normal. All right, I've read The Odyssey. I understand how this works. Give me some that are a little bit more out there.
Well, I also have in front of me a Scorpion Necromancer. So he's kind of interesting, because you've got the Necromancer character, and then his background has all these scorpion claws coming out of him. So those are your 2 types of cards there. So that one's kind of interesting. Let's see, what do we got here? And of course, you guys, if you get this game, may not even have these same characters.
Yes, it'll be very different, actually. It's almost guaranteed that you'll be different because of the amount of cards in this game.
Oh, here's a fun one. Here's a Destructive Stockbroker.
Yeah. I mentioned that in my opener.
Oh,
that was,
so
that
true.
Was my favorite.
And yeah, that was mine.
I want to know how a cannibalistic skeleton works.
Here's an Arctic diver, poor thing.
Oh,
how's
also,
he going to dive?
So screwed. I love it.
And a socialite vagabond. So the vagabond that goes to all the parties.
Yes.
Yeah. See, psychiatrist, bard, that actually totally fits. All bards are kind of should be psychiatrists. Anyway, it's kind of cool as the cards are created. So, of course, one of the draws of this game is going to be the artwork. It's going to be the fact that the cards go together. The background totally fits around every single possible character that could go on top of it. It's beautifully designed.
Yeah.
And the cards even fit in terms of they've got 2 different gold costs, which add together. They've got ribbons, either a pink ribbon, a blue ribbon, or if the ribbons overlap, because there's one on each card, the clear and the white, then they are
It's like
misfit.
A purple.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the misfits, though.
Yeah.
And then you've got your top kind of triggering ability, which is what I talked about earlier, the stars or the triangles. Or the hearts or the trophies. And then you've got a bottom ability that only will trigger if the criteria are met on the top ability. So all these cards had to be so carefully designed, I feel like, to go together.
Sure.
Where you could mix any background with any card and it would make sense. And I think we've played several times, gone through, at least the whole deck and mixed it up and everything like that. And we only had one instance where we were like, the text doesn't fit exactly together. And we had to kind of make a call on that.
Right.
But other than that, it's amazing that you can have completely different sets of text and the pictures and it all goes together and can play in any order like that.
Well, and something to think about too, like just from a balancing perspective, because you can trigger the bottoms again. Like, there's multiple cards that will let you re-trigger the bottom. So that's something else to think about when you're putting this game together. You know, the artwork, you're buying this game for the cards. Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing. You're into the card crafting. Card crafting, bro. That's it.
Congratulations.
Card
you
crafting
got there.
System. Woof. That was a struggle, guys. It just came right there after just not, after giving it up. Sometimes you just got to give things up and then it comes to you. Kind of like some of the abilities in this game. Like, sometimes you got to discard cards and then you get new cards and then everything comes together. Sometimes you draw crap. You know, it just kind of depends. Anyways, the artwork. The artwork on the cards is excellent. I think it's super fun. It definitely hits the vibe all the way through. I mean, it's just, it's so cool how when you have multiple cards that are overlapping each other that it can make it work that well. It, to me, I think the artwork's the best part of this game. And the fun combos that like come from creating the character with the whatever the mutation is, if you will. I think that's the draw of the theme. That's the draw of what you're doing here. And so if you're not here for that, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you now, like, that's what the game is wanting you to think about, is how this fun combo works with other chaotic fun combos together in your tableau. Now, I know that we recently talked about another tableau building game not too long ago with Castle Combo. This plays differently, but it does really lean into that combo concept. But Anna, I'm curious from an artwork perspective. I know the game's light, I know the game's quick and whatever, but to me, I feel like I'm just putting together a cast of cool characters. Like, the idea of influencing anything or like being the one in control of the land, that theme does not come through for me. I'm curious what you think about that.
I think it comes through. So I think this game is going to be so much more fun if you role play it a little bit. You know, if you lay down a card and you're like, time for my champion peddler, he's going to come out and he's going to get me some more money, you know?
Sure.
And then because the claiming of the land is the quest tokens.
Sure. Yep.
And you are, and they do have, I mean, they have beautiful artwork, and it is of the landscape as you're collecting.
I guess.
And of the different landscapes. So, I mean, I feel like that theme comes through. But yeah, if you're just in this game for the strategy and you're not even going to read the fun names on the cards and think about how it's hilarious that this scorpion necromancer is activating this stockbroker, you know, whatever, it's not going to be as much fun. That's all I'm saying.
I would agree with, yes, I think that's accurate. I think we're both kind of saying that. Like, if you're not into the quirky concept, then I'm just going to go ahead and tell you now this game's not for you. And I'm not trying to turn everybody away, because I remember seeing this game and being very excited about the concept in general. And that's part of what I think I'm harping on the artwork so much, because I liked this idea of building up your like band of misfits and then going out and conquering the land. And I feel like I got the first half of that really well in the theme. I don't feel like I got that in the second half of I'm actually conquering something. I just feel like I'm turning in tokens. But that's just me.
Yeah, you just got to have better imagination.
You're right. It's me.
Because I did feel that way. I did feel like I'm conquering the land and I want to be the first one to get the water part, right? Yeah. And you get more points if you're the first one to conquer and gain influence and control over the water. And I mean, you are. But yeah, you have to role play it a little bit. You have to imagine it a little bit.
I suppose that's fair. I mean, it is there a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and I recall that because you've played more of the card crafting games than I have,
yep,
that you felt like this one was very well done in terms of the card crafting and how they went together.
Yeah.
Compared to some of the other ones that you've played.
I think my two favorite, and they're both from AEG, is as far as the card crafting system, is this and Dead Reckoning.
Hmm.
Dead Reckoning is very heavy. It's a very different concept than this game. The reason I like the Dead Reckoning one is you sleeve cards to upgrade your cards over the course of the game. So in that way, like, the card crafting is just a piece of it, but it's done very well.
Yeah, yeah.
Here, I mean, obviously the cards are crafted ahead of time, but I do feel like it just, everything is, there's an elegance to the way that the two cards come together. Like I was kind of talking with the artwork, and you were even talking about earlier with the way that the abilities come together. I think that's your main draw here. And I think AEG does do a good job with this one of creating that elegance of this is how these things come together. You could change them out if you want to. But I also really like the fact that, and I didn't even think about it until you just mentioned it, like no one else is going to have the same deck that we do. Not even close. Because there's so many cards.
Yes, and I was going to mention that too. They do not skimp you on the cards. So again, we are both agreeing that the main draw of this game is the fun characters that you get to create. And there are tons of them. These decks are huge and there's limitless possibilities.
So I think we really hit the draw then. Like we understand what we're here for. So then do you have a favorite mechanic in this game or something that this game does that you just really enjoy?
Yeah, I felt like in terms of a tableau building game, it gave me what I wanted in terms of a tableau building game. I think I would have been disappointed if there wasn't the variety that there was in the cards. So sure. I thought it was really neat that, oh man, we've got four different card types and they activate in different ways. And I can't really play a green one because it has certain conditions that need to be met until I've structured some of my other ones in order to meet the conditions of this green one. There's some really cool ones where if you can play them at the right time, like when you get almost to zero money, they give you a ton of money or almost to zero cards. They let you draw a bunch of cards. But if you don't play those at the exact right time, then, you know, if I get too low on money, then I can't buy the card that gives me more money, you know. So I felt like the difference in the cards was a real draw because you've got the different ways that they activate, but then you've also got your ribbons and those count for certain bonuses or for certain things, and you're paying attention to row and you're paying attention to column. Now, it is interesting. You cannot plan strategy very far in advance because you're cycling through cards very quickly in this game.
Yeah.
And yeah, it plays really, really fast. I guess those are my two things. I liked that there were so many different things to watch for in combo with the cards. There wasn't just one strategy or one thing to play for. And I really liked that it played very quickly, that we were able to cycle through the deck quickly. I know we were talking about, so as you're doing building games, you always want to think, like, do you get stuck? And I mean, there were a couple points in the game, in the plays that we've done where I was like, I can't get a blue ribbon and I really need one for this goal or something. But honestly, in terms of continuing to cycle, you know, get the money, get the influence, get the cards, there was always a way that I could do it. So it played smoothly in that way too, which again is a testament to the design of the game because I made these cards, you know, like.
Sure.
So how is anybody supposed to know that they balance? And they did balance pretty well. How about you?
So it's interesting. I think that what you said is a double-edged sword. I think on the one hand, it is great that there's four different types of triggers and the way the cards work. And there's three different factions and there's all these cards and they do all these different things and they have all these combos because you're putting these cards together. And on one hand, that's great. But especially with the fact that like you and I play a two-player game. And the idea of these cards is that you do chain them one after the other. We have experienced times where you just can't find cards that go together and your engine can kind of stall out a little bit. And I don't know what to do with that. Like I'm usually somebody who is pretty cool about the fact that card draw is a thing. And you just deal with it. If it doesn't become what you want, you kind of adapt. But in a chain building game like this one, you really need to eventually get some cards that work for you. I mean, there's multiple ways to draw, so you're never stuck with the hand that you have, which is awesome. I love that. But at the same time, I think one game we played, I drew like 30 cards over the course, like maybe even more than that. I lost count. But I had a ton of card draw and I couldn't find cards that like was like it was middle of the game when it started happening and I had insane card draw, but I couldn't find any cards that would start letting me do other things. I would either get more cards that would draw cards or I'd have cards that really wouldn't work together. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, how do I make this puzzle work? So I think there are times where there's just so much of a deck that it can kind of get shuffled into this weirdness. And so for me, it was kind of a bit of a, yeah, it's really good, but also it has its downside too. So I wanted to go ahead and add that there. I think the thing for me that I really enjoyed is it has this layer underneath where when you do start chaining things together, you score an insane number of points that your opponent can't see without really studying your board, because you have the main areas of influence where everybody can see what you're doing there. But
everybody can see where you're taking over the world.
Yeah, that's
fine. To go with the theme here.
That's right.
But not everybody can see the internal structure of your team and the extra points you're earning from
yes.
that.
And yeah. I mean, it's not like it's hidden. Like your opponent could ask about it, but it's a 20 to 30 minute game. Like let's move on in a 2-player game, you know, and just kind of see how each person did it. So I really like that chaining can happen within your group, to where you're scoring a number of points where even though your opponent might have taken over one more area than you did, you've got way more points in your crew, which is causing a ton more points in the end game. And I like that.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, and to your point of drawing a ton of cards and you still couldn't get something that got you the influence as opposed to the cards and the money, I think is what one thing was happening. I guess when I'm saying that I don't ever feel stuck, it's that there is always a way to do that. I mean, there was one game where I discarded my entire hand.
Yep.
But when you discard your entire hand, you get to draw that many and two more.
It's
sure,
true.
It takes your turn, but, and yeah, you could use a whole turn just getting money. You use a whole turn getting an influence if you wanted to. And so that's what I mean by not feeling stuck. I think the game is, yeah. The ability to get you out of yourself if you get stuck.
The game
stuck.
Does give you lots of exit strategies to get out of the mess that you're in. But I'm just saying there is a point where like it becomes too much. And I wish that I like this game at 2. I really think that this game at 2 is something that you can get in, you can do the thing you want to do, and you can get out without feeling like you've overinvested. 3 and 4, I don't really feel the same way because there's just not enough player interaction. It already feels pretty low on the interaction scale. So you already scale it with the number of areas that you're trying to cover, but you don't change the card count. And I don't know how you would in a meaningful way without screwing up the balance. It's just what this game is. So you got to know what you're getting into on the front end. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, and there's a reason why we chose to record this at the 2-top, because at 2 players, it plays fast,
yep.
It plays quick, it's fun, it's quirky, but both of us at higher player counts get a little bit bored with the game.
I'll never play this at 4 again.
Because it takes just a little bit longer. Now, I do think if you had a group of people that was just in it for the characters and was role-playing it, was just having fun with it, again, if you're in it for that reason, you're going to enjoy taking an hour to just play with the characters and have fun and act out what you're doing. But if you're in it more for the strategy, I would say the strategy would get more repetitive after an hour and you'd be ready for it to be done.
Yep. No, I completely agree with that. And I would say too, like even just sitting here listening to this discussion that we're having, the strategy has to be light. You can't take this game too seriously. Like I know having played it that I will sit there and try and combo together the cards that I have. But there's like this chaotic quirkiness where you are playing the cards and you are putting together a strategy, but it needs to be taken with like a grain of salt. Like you gotta chill, enjoy the combos as they come and try and make it work. So I think we're kind of moving into that who's this game for space. I think you gotta be okay with being on the lighter end of the strategy spectrum for this one.
Yeah, well, and I had a little bit more to say about the player interaction part of it, too.
Oh, sure, jump in.
Because that's something that we talked about, because some people like more solo building games, and some people like games where you can really impact what the other player is doing. The player interaction in this game is light. It is limited to things like if you have more or less cards, resources, or money than the other player. Sometimes that's a condition. There are some of the star cards where you got to pay that require you to give a resource or give a card to the other player of a certain type, to the player of a certain type. I didn't see any cards in the times that we played that really let you impact you, the other player's board.
No, it was much more like you're giving a player something for you to get more of something.
Yeah, yeah. Or what the other player's doing and what they have impacts your ability to get something. There's no way to, like, screw the other person in this game.
It's
and
definitely
so,
not a take
so
that.
If you enjoy more of a PvP, like, mess with the other person's strategy kind of thing, that's not going to work.
But I will say, too, like, even as you say it, I'm like, man, I'm so happy there's not a take that mechanic in this game. Because I do feel like the ideal audience for this game is people who love Munchkin. the theme of Munchkin, but hate that it takes 3 hours. And so if you're somebody who's like, man, I want a good 20 to 30 minutes or even like 45 to an hour with a bigger group of friends, and I want to have a little bit of quirkiness, a little bit of strategy, and then be done and have like an end game where I know that as soon as someone does X, that's going to be the last round and the game is over. And there's none of this take that for 4 hours crap. Then this is a great game for you. Because it does, it delivers on the quirkiness, it delivers on the combos, it delivers on all the fun nature of it all. And then as soon as someone plays their 16th card, then that will be the last round of the game. There is nothing that can stop that. So if that's something that you're looking for, to me, like that's what, when I originally was pitched this game, I was like, oh man, it's a fun version of Munchkin.
Like, that's exactly what you said. You were like, oh my goodness, it's an organized version of Munchkin.
Yeah.
Because Jared hates the fact that
I hate it.
That you can build all the way up to Munchkin and then the last round can just go on forever.
Everyone hates it. Yeah. In your heart of hearts, everyone hates it.
I don't know. Some people really like Munchkin,
no,
babe.
They hate it.
I'm just saying.
They just don't want to admit it, but they hate it.
Jared's projecting onto all you guys. If you like Munchkin, good for you.
Munchkin's great for the first 9 rounds. And then it goes to
and then
poop.
It's 3 hours of everybody trying to do the 10th round. You're right. Anyway, enough about that. But
sorry,
yes,
a little side tangent there.
I do remember you saying that you were like, oh man, if this could fix those problems with Munchkin, that'd be great. And it did. Like, we played it and we were like, this has the vibe of Munchkin, but there's a real game here.
And then it's over.
And there's a real end to the game that you're playing here.
Because I don't know. I'm curious for you. For me, like, this kind of humor and this kind of, like, what it's trying to do in a game, like, I have an investment level, an investment amount of time where I'm like, okay, I've done it. I've had enough. I don't need any more of it. I'm glad I did it, but now I want to be done with it. And I'm curious if you have that kind of same kind of thing, too.
Yeah, but I don't think that everybody would. I don't know that just because we're both in that camp, though, I mean, everybody would.
Who else is this game for in your mind?
Well, I was just thinking how much kind of older kids might think this game was fun.
Like teenagers.
Yeah, teenagers who have, you know, you've watched the superheroes, you've watched the fantasy, so you know, like, what a Cyclops is and what a this and a that is, you know? Like, so, I don't know. I know we used to do a lot of games with youth, and I could completely see certain, you know, middle school, high schoolers just wanting to play the game for hours, wanting to go through and see all the characters and create the craziest characters and just have a lot of fun with it. And so I was thinking about that. I was like, man, this would be a great one for, like, people that organize youth events and or teachers, you know, to, like, have in their classroom, because I think the kids would think it was so fun and so fun that they could make their own characters and they'd probably pick their favorite ones. And yeah, I can just see them getting into it. And I thought it might be fun for people that are more into the fantasy or the role-playing scene to see this kind of comical twist on it. Might be fun as well. So, yeah. Anybody else you had in mind that you thought might enjoy it?
I mean, obviously, like, if you're into combo building or chain stacking, like, all that is here. And, I mean, I loved having turns where I was playing like 2 and 3 cards at a time because I had the right cards that lined up. That was super fun. And
that was unique. I didn't ever do that.
I only paid for one of them. That was the cool part. So I think it has its place. I don't think it's my favorite combo builder, but I will say for what it is, I had fun with it.
I also think that because this is a strategy light game, with a fun skin, I think it could be great for entry-level gamers.
I agree with that. It is very, it's very easy for someone who's looking for their first, like, either tableau builder or combo builder or whatever it may be. I mean, it's like Castle Combo that we talked about a few weeks ago. Absolutely, you could make this be something that's entry-level into that genre.
We talked about that a few months ago, but yes.
Woof, it's been a wild ride. So long, May. I want nothing to do with you again.
Oh, my.
For 2026.
But welcome back, June.
Hey.
Game Table Podcast is back.
Anyways, you got any other thoughts?
No, I think I said it all.
Yep.
So I think...
A little convoluted, but we got there.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you, listeners. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Check out our website at thegametablepodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek. All these links are also in the description. 5-star reviews, subscribing your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, if that's your thing, and joining the conversation on Discord. These heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Ashley McCaffrey for her cover art, to Anna Snyder who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexi Chislin for the How to Play background music. Join us next week as we head back over to the feature table. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Goodbye.
And find out if you're a hero, a villain, or just a guy trying to make their way in the world.
I'm a girl.
Or just a person trying to make their way in the world.
Much better.